rights to marriage equality and changes in adoption laws, the number of same-sex families with kids is exploding. As a result, there's a huge need for LGBT-friendly programming for kids, so bring on the drag queens!
Circus acrobat and drag queen Muffy Fishbasket is filling that void by literally reading to the children, in a good way, at her Storytime with Drag Queens, which is quickly becoming a hit at Chicago's LGBT Center on Halsted.
Today, Muffy Fishbasket joins us to take a look at classic children's books that spoke to us as LGBT people back when we were wee little kids.
Plus, Patti LuPone reads Madonna to filth.
Spider-Man's Tom Holland slays it with Rihanna's Umbrella on Lip Sync Battle.
And Richard Simmons is coming after all you shady queens who put him on blast.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Right now, you have Feast of Fun in your ears because for the last 13 years, a listener just like you took the time to support this one-of-a-kind, in-depth programming. If you like the show, please make a donation at feastoffun.com/donate. And if you didn't like the show, make a donation anyway to help us improve.
Butterfly in the sky, I can fly twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow. Our guest today is drag queen and circus acrobat Muffy Fishbasket.
Hey girl.
Muffy reads to the children in a good way every month at her Storytime with Drag Queens at Chicago's LGBT Center on Halsted. Happy Mother's Day, girlfriend.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
How did this fantastic idea come about? Because I love the idea of drag queens scaring children.
Right? We
terrorize
do. Okay.
Them
so,
kids.
Like, at first, like, when I heard about it, I was like, when I heard it, so I'm in New York and LA, they're like doing this thing and they're like, Storytime with Drag Queens, we're reading to children. And I was like, wait, are you reading children? Girl, those garanimals are so 1972. That tiger doesn't even match that elephant bottom. What are you doing?
Oh no, she don't.
Right, girl. You better don't. So anyway, my friend James Dorian Gray set us up with Women and Children First bookstore, and we started doing it there. And we only did like a couple of story times, and the first time was like at 8 o'clock at night or something. So there was no children there, but it was full
people.
Yeah,
adults
they were like,
oh yeah,
they were all about drag queens reading stories. Okay. So we did it. And then we did it a couple more times there. And it got so full, it became a fire hazard.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Had the women and children first, or was it at the
Women
center?
And children first.
Okay.
So then we moved to Center in Halsted with my friend Tamale Sepp. So we started setting it up there. And we're still involved with Women and Children First. And so they supply the books and they come and they like sell the books that we're reading and everything. Mm-hmm. So, but we go there and we go to their youth center at the center on Halsted and we read stories to children.
It's
amazing. Or gay parents or straight parents and hipster parents. And it's amazing. So,
yeah, I guess this is the big controversy that's happening, right? So the census was supposed to
one coming up in 2020, right?
In 2020, they were going to count households that had same-sex parents.
Oh, okay.
And with children. And of course, the Republicans and Trump axed that idea.
What haven't they axed?
They fired those people. There have been a lot of other secondary studies that are saying that because of marriage equality, because of the rise in adoption equality, we have an unprecedented number.
So the rise of the gay agenda, according to them.
Well, you know, and these kids that grow up in these same-sex households are actually super well-adjusted, super loved and appreciated and healthy.
Despite studies that try and say the opposite. Like the Regenerist study back in the day.
Right.
But it's, you know, it was a bullshit study.
So anyways, there's an urgent need for events at LGBT community centers that include children. So it's no wonder that Storytime with Drag Queens is such a hit.
Yeah, no, it has really taken off. I'm really, really excited about it. And we're actually starting to do more of a we're going to do the next one isn't actually we're not reading to children. We're doing a family friendly drag show. And recently, did you see like the big backlash? Apparently, like DragCon or whatever. they're like making it more family friendly, and there's drag queens being like, drag is not family friendly, fuck your kids, like this shit, and like they're getting like really angry about it.
But you know, yeah, I've been to drag camp last year, and they, you know, and people were there with young children and right. with, you know, with their teenage kids.
And I'm like, that's fine. You want to cut off like a generation. I wish I would have had drag queens reading to me as a child. It would have came out a lot earlier.
Well, can't we have both?
Yes. Well, we do. And we should.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about ambiguity and synchronicity and right. doing things that sort of oppose each other or seem sort of discongruent ideas.
Trust, my drag character, I would expect my drag character to be the last person to be reading to kids. But we have a blast. They're so much fun. So the last time we did it, so it was a small audience because we had to change the date because there was a lot of things going on at the center. And so Valerie Dolls came and she's reading.
Local
and
drag queen.
Yes, local drag queen. Great. More of a cabaret queen with the burlesque crowd and everything. She's reading, of course, Theater Queen, so she's like really getting into it. She wears these great like ruffly dresses, very Varla Jean Merman, like the big crinolines and everything. This little girl was up under her skirt for most of the story.
Oh my
god. It was
god.
The most entertaining
looking for the
thing,
candy.
I guess. I don't know. She just loved the ruffles. She thought it was a big old flower.
Aww.
Now, how do you smell explain like one, what no, a drag
not
queen
not.
How do you explain what a drag queen is to a 5-year-old?
I don't. That's up to their parents.
What do you hear parents saying to their kids?
They just literally. Okay, so we do a photography thing after the story time. We like set up a chair and they come up and everything. They hand their like newborn child that still is connected with an umbilical cord to me. And I'm like, okay, I'm all like stabbing and choking hazards. Are you sure you want me to hold your child? They don't care.
Because you're
care.
Like more accessorized than Lady Gaga. I've got a chainsaw as a necklace.
Right, exactly. It's still running and they're handing their child to me. Okay. But I think a lot of little girls and a little, they think that we're princesses.
Okay, oh,
we're
really?
So overdone. I had this little girl, and it was
a comparison to Disney princesses. Or?
Yeah, I think so, okay. Because we're so like out there and so outrageous.
But I've seen some of the queens.
I mean, except
you
for
work
me,
with,
I'm completely subtle.
So the parents are like, these aren't ugly women; these are actually men dressed as women.
Why you gotta say ugly women?
Well, not you, but you know.
I've seen some of the queens you work with.
Oh, damn, that's shady of
me. Hard women, I should say.
Hard women. So tough I had women. This little girl come up and she like, she handed me a Valentine and then she ran away. Like we were leaving and I was like, bye. This is like one of our last times at Women and Children First. I was like, bye everybody. Have a good night. And she handed me this Valentine and she ran away. And then she came back and then she kissed my hand. And then she ran away. And then she came up and gave me this biggest hug ever. Which was just, it was adorable. And it was like, this is when you know that your art is making a difference. Mm. Not to be like, totally
this is really
bougie,
fantastic, but, though, Muffy. I really love this idea. And I just think it's so heartwarming. It's such a fantastic breath of fresh air.
Right.
To, you know, not that drag is exciting and wonderful, or as Peaches Christ likes to say, drag is fierce and fun. Drag is fierce.
I love
and
her.
Fun.
I love her so much. So,
but it's a
topic.
Nice fresh. It's a nice breath of fresh air, and I really love the fact that you're sort of like saying, you know, since drag is sort of reaching a lot of families and a lot of LGBT families are needing something that sort of appeals to their own sensibilities. I think it's really
but
to be
I love this dude. I know like the current administration like hates on the new generation coming in and they're like snowflakes and everything. What I love about them is that they're so fluid in who they are and they're willing to express themselves and not put themselves in these labels of what their parents did. And I know we're going to talk about Free to Be You and Me later on.
Yeah, but it's like, Thomas's groundbreaking album.
It's like, but like, what happened to our hippie parents? Like, what happened to these hippies that were going to change the world?
Of Free to Be You and Me. And you said, I'm free to be you and me. I'm
now
free
all of
to
a sudden
me.
They're Donald Trump.
Not everybody's
like,
that.
Not everybody, but this is where it went. And it's like, you know, you think you win this battle and you're going to be this generation.
It's
but this
change everything.
Next generation, like you can be down on them all you want, but they're going to be the ones taking care of you when you're pooping in your diapers. So you better be good to them. You better be good.
Give them healthcare education.
Right?
You don't want a stupid nurse wiping your ass.
Thank you. Thank you. Why are we the best country in the world, apparently, with like some of the worst education?
So how do you guys go deciding which books you're going to read for the kids? Because there's so many great books that spoke to us as children, like and albums. Like I think Marlo Thomas's Free to Be You and Me is one of the groundbreaking examples of diversity and even addressing like gender and sexual nonconformity.
Right. In like the early 70s.
In the 70s, they had two babies who didn't know what their gender was. And Mel Brooks
didn't matter.
And Marlo Thomas were sort of like, am I a boy or a girl?
But there's also a shift in that period of time, though, too, with how people raise their kids. Because still up until like the 50s, it was kind of like this Victorian attitude on how to raise a child. And then things with like Sesame Street came out, and then Free to Be Me and You. And so the 70s was a time about like, you know, let's love our children. Let's teach them how to be good to each other and how to be fair with each other. And I don't know how that did change. I think maybe it's the rise of the conservative Christian right.
Well, Marlo Thomas was interviewed about 6 years ago about the legacy of Free to Be You and Me. And she was probably in a bad mood that day. She said it was a colossal failure. We don't agree with that. Right. On the podcast, we said maybe it's time for a new artist, a new recording artist like Lady Gaga to pick up the mantle and do a Christmas special. Our Thanksgiving special about reaching out to the children and have the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future represented by three different media personalities and make food and wear a dress made out of AIDS ribbons. And Lady Gaga, somebody at Lady Gaga's camp listened to that podcast we did and made it possible.
I have some ideas
and
for
then
you, girl.
She did.
And it came to life. Mm-hmm. And so now, story time with drag queens is warming the hearts of children. You're like, you know, like Tammy Brown says, walking children in nature. You actually are walking children in
nature. I'm reading to children in nature. That'll be my next step. We're moving on. So like next for Pride Month, we are going to be in the Chicago Public Libraries, and then we're actually going to be at Navy Pier.
This is fantastic.
So,
this is a huge
day. Yeah. So it's really growing and it's great.
So but you're the wholesome drag queen. Navigating the fact that you have, you know, a burlesque, a sort of rowdy nightclub act, and then you're, you know, alternative Sesame Street.
I really try and make it, and our girls try and make it like entertaining for the parents and for the kids. So it's like you get those double entendre jokes that the kids aren't going to get, but the parents do.
Mommy, what's a tuck?
Right, exactly. So yeah, so
it's when daddy tries to try dressed up as mommy.
He got to keep the marriage fresh.
So what books are you reading? What books spoke to you as a kid that you're itching to read to kids today?
So I started out, the first book that I read was Runaway Bunny, which was the same author and artist that did Goodnight Moon.
Mm-hmm.
It was what my mom read to me as a child and as a divorced mother. And a single parent, that it was like, I guess it spoke to me as a child because there was no father involved whatsoever in this book.
That's a Margaret Wise Brown.
Yes. So at one point, and this is where everything is kind of based off as a child growing up, he runs away and joins the circus and he becomes a trapeze artist.
Oh, so it was much the like
first,
yourself.
Right. So it was the first job that I ever wanted to have. When my mom would ask me, I said, I wanted to be a trapeze. Like that's what.
What was the experience for you actually going into circus art school and actually getting on a trapeze for the first time versus your expectation as a child of what that experience would have been like?
Oh, God, I don't know. Well, I don't do flying trapeze. That would be terrifying. I do static. So it's like, it's just laying there and I'm flipping around on it.
But the first time, like, for example, you, like the teeter totter, I guess, is the one of the, when you jump on a seesaw and you go flipping through the air. And that is terrifying.
Girl,
because if you do that wrong, if you mess that up, you mess up your knees.
You mess up everything.
Yeah.
Like your head and your brain and all those things. It's scary. Yeah. It's like sometimes you just, you watch the teacher do it. They tell you how to do it. And you have to let go of the instruction and just go for it. Like I had to dive through a hoop at one point and I was like terrified to do it, and you know, it's just like one of those things, like you just have to hope that you do it,
but you were really excited at the time, and so I can imagine.
I think the adrenaline really helps. It's to get you into the positions and the things that you have to do.
And you're easily excited already.
My tuck is tight.
So I imagine that you've sort of reached out to a lot of gender nonconforming performers and drag queens in town to participate. What are some of the books that they sort of feel that really speaks to them?
Well, like, I know Ashley Morgan is really into Dr. Seuss. That's like where she's from. Coco Chanel has done a lot of dance and like books and books of girls of color. She's like brought there. I really want to get a Hispanic drag queen to come in and just do like a full on Spanish book for the kids. I think that would be amazing.
Dora the Explorer.
Or
is
not.
That really a book?
Dora is a brand.
Okay.
But I mean, in Spanish.
You know, product. Oh, it's in Spanish, of course. That's the whole thing.
Oh, she actually speaks Spanish.
Como te dice? You know, fierce lip sync. You know, wow. Something
that
like
was
that.
It. That was the extent.
Actually, Bianca Del Rio, when she was auditioning for RuPaul's Drag Race, her celebrity impersonation was Dora the Explorer.
Oh, I did see that. That was amazing.
And they told her
amazing.
She couldn't do it because she's not a real person.
It's a brand. Yeah, you can't do fictional characters. One book that I feel that a lot of people who are LGBT were related to quite strongly as kids was Where the Wild Things Are by Maurice Sendak. Mm-hmm. It was published in 1963, and it's basically a story about a boy and his anger.
Because we have a little bit of Velvet Rage as children, right?
And so he's having an argument with his mother. What was the
and
argument
about? All have.
He's sent to his room, and then he imagines he goes off to this far-off land, and they celebrate him as like, hey, we just found you, and you're our new king. And then they
the monsters.
The monsters find him, and he has all this camaraderie with them, and then they crown him as a king, and then they kind of turn on him. And like they want to eat him.
As kids, we, you know, I always hear this expression. It's like, it's so scary to be an adult, but I think it's more terrifying to be a child.
Oh, I think so completely.
Because there's monsters underneath your bed.
Mm-hmm.
And so Where the Wild Things Are is a very different story because Max becomes the king of the monsters.
Mm-hmm.
And the monsters turn on him. They turned
girl, to, like in any gay bar you have ever been to.
And Maurice Sendak says that it was actually a story of him as growing up as a kid, and those monsters were all his like aunts and uncles.
Mm-hmm.
That just, you know, I think it was probably he had his bar mitzvah and like, hey, you're the king now, you're the prince. They put you up on the chair, and then they nitpicked him to death and like attacked him. And so he's just like, ugh. But I mean, it's a beautifully created. It's a wonderful story, and it's just the artwork along with it is also very stunning.
So when it's time for Max to return back to his home from his fantasy life as the king of the monsters, the wild things cried, oh, please don't go. We'll eat you up. We love you so. And Max said, no. And the wild things roared their terrible roar and gnashed their terrible teeth and rolled their terrible eyes and showed their terrible claws. But Max stepped into his private boat and waved goodbye.
Bye, girl. Hey, girl. So don't you think that's a, like any subculture? Like any, like I know where we're like talking, like where it's like within the gay community or the gay subculture. But like that's like any subculture I think that anybody is involved in.
Well, here's something I've observed as somebody who's really interested in developing alternative communities. And the Radical Fairies from the Radical Fairies to the Coquettes. I've observed this in drag bars and drag cliques and tribes. Eventually, the person who founds it or the leader of that tribe gets ostracized or, you know, crucified by the tribe.
Mm-hmm.
So it happened with Harry Hay and the Radical Fairies. It happened with Hibiscus and the Coquettes.
It'll happen to Muffy Fishbasket and the Six Divas
Jesus
One Queen.
Jesus and the Jews.
Mushy Fish. What did you say?
Muffy Fishbasket.
But Jesus.
And part of it is, I think, is that As people who create communities, we sometimes become parental figures to our communities.
Sure.
And for a community to continue thriving, it has to create distance between its founder. And I'm starting to observe this.
But then
with
it's
drag
not
queens
too long
RuPaul.
Before it starts to like that community, I think, starts to change into something that it never was.
And
before.
It's not healthy for it not to continue being led by its founder.
Have you guys like seen the whole unicorn thing in England?
No, what is
like,
that?
Oh God, there's like, I don't know. There's like, it's like the Coquettes. It's like very like, everybody's like a unicorn and it's like this like big commune, sort of like they all live together and sparkly. I'm like, I want to live there.
But ultimately, I think, you know, the story of the Where the Wild Things Are is about finding your tribe and being at peace with the anger that, you know, seeing that anger and that rage that you have as a LGBT person as something you can take off, like a costume, you know.
For but us, I also think
our sexuality and our gender is something that's somewhat fixed to us, you know.
Sure.
And so when we think about these emotions, we also tend to think of them as permanent aspects of our identity, but they really can just be taken off, just like Max's desire to be a monster.
But even deeper than that, you also, like, when you're, like, let's say that Max is, like, this whole analogy of him coming out, and this is, like, his first experience with the gay community or whatever, you also grow and know when to leave that first group to find the new group.
The bar's closing. Let's get out.
Right. When you're ready to leave Boys Town and move north, I'm there for you, babies. I'll show you.
This book is fascinating that you brought this up. William's Doll by Charlotte Zolotow from 1972. Mm-hmm. It's about a boy who wants a doll, even though dolls typically are considered a toy only for girls. His father, uncomfortable with William's request, tries giving William toys the father considers more gender appropriate, such as a basketball or a train set. While William enjoys these toys, he continues to ask for a doll. Eventually, the boy's grandmother fulfills the request, explaining to Dad that William will use the doll to practice being a good father.
Yes.
Aww.
So that was a very, that was from Free to Be, You and Me. Was
that
like
era.
One of those.
Well, it led to that skit with Marla Thomas and Mel Brooks.
Right. So there was I think there was like a bunch of stories that were part of this, like Free to Be You and Me. Mm-hmm. And that was like,
it was an experimental album.
That was like that was, one of them.
At the height of desegregation. And
it was a TV special as
it
well.
It was a TV special.
And they had books, right?
Right. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Shel Silverstein and a lot of like celebrities.
But all these celebrities, but it was a failure.
Well, to Marlo.
Marlo Thomas feels
it
like
it lives on in our heart, though, doesn't it?
The message of Free to Be You and Me may have been lost, and that we live in very conservative times, and that bullying. It was at the height of awareness of bullying in schools, and that was her response that she felt like.
But
you know,
I think it's like we've led into more of that, and I think it might have been part of that. Like, I know that I've been very critical about, like, where have all the hippies gone that were our parents? Where have the people from Woodstock? Like,
we are the hippies now.
But, like, what is, like, yeah, but, like,
it's
our
your job
parents,
to be that
people
hippie.
Get conservative as they
right,
get older.
Right. This isn't where we should be now. We should not have Trump as a president with this, like, crazy conservativeness.
No,
like,
we should have a dude with long hair and like, a, you know,
right,
a tie-dyed shirt.
Right. We should have been way beyond this by now. And we're not. And it's sad. But, and this is why I always encourage, I'm about education, which is funny for my character from Muffy, because she's really stupid. I'm always about people, like, knowing their education and their history and their drag story and where we come from. If you research, like, the 1920s, it was huge. Like, we had a huge gay following. We had the Pansy, what was it? It was the, was it
Pansy Division?
That's a bad. No, it was the Pansy Craze. So, like, we were, like, gays were hired to come to bars and to, like, and to make it a scene and to make it amazing. Mae West wrote a play called The Drag about drag queens. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, this is where we were. So then what happened?
Like, the Depression hit.
The Depression hit. And so and conservative
came on.
And religious right came in and all this stuff where we became ostracized and evil because it's really easy to do that. So, like, I really try and encourage people so that this doesn't happen again.
Yep.
At the end of World War II, we saw an extraordinary book author, Dr. Seuss, come out with several groundbreaking books.
Right.
The Cat in the Hat, that used only 50 words, and his sequel to it, Green Eggs and Ham, that where he won the bet between him and his publisher that he could not do another book without exceeding the word limit of 50 words. And at that time, you know, you had like Dick and Jane, See,
sure.
Spot, Go,
sure.
and stuff like that. And Green Eggs and Ham is basically about a book about a guy trying to get another guy to eat things. And what's weirder than green eggs and ham? It's like, it's spoiled, it's forbidden, it's this awkward, horrible, disgusting thing that when he tries it, it's actually quite good.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know, I mean, it's very easy to mm-hmm. see the metaphor, the
most definitely. There. I think even more than that, like, he went on to, like, doing the snitches, mm-hmm. where it was, like, the Starbelly snitches.
Mm-hmm. Where you say it snitches was, like, or snitches?
Is it snitches?
I think it's snitches, isn't it?
Snitches? Snitches. It's probably snitches. Snitches. Right. But it's that classism.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
that
yeah.
He went on to, like, really, and that's, I think, even more than anything with who's gay, who's straight, who's right. this, who's that. It, like, labels. We're really in a class mm-hmm. system right now. And that's why I tell people, I'm like, you know what? It's not about race and it's mm-hmm. not about who's gay and who's straight. Mm-hmm. It's the 1% trying to keep everybody else against each other.
And for those people that aren't familiar with the Star-Bellied Snitches, is like these all like these bird beings, basically.
Yeah, yeah,
and they all live along this beach. And some of them have stars upon their bellies.
They have like one star or and two?
No, it was only one star okay. and some don't. And so what happened? Right, was yeah. the other Star-Bellied Snitches looked at the ones that had that didn't have any stars on there. They got a machine
right.
to put a star belly on there on themselves, and then the other ones were like, well, now everybody has one star. Well, now I'm going to have to get two stars,
right.
and so they would right. start getting two stars. So it was this kind of this game of like brinkmanship, where it was like they keep pushing somebody to the edge, and you have to updo it. Mm-hmm. So eventually, some of them were just covered in stars, and they're just kind of like, what the fuck is going on here? Why can't we all? why can't we all just get along?
Right. Exactly. So, you know, he was like ahead of his time, I mm-hmm. think. Like, he was.
But there are people out there there's a lot of people out there that are very uncomfortable with Dr. Seuss because of some of his yeah. cartoons yeah, early yeah. on were very anti-Semitic, I believe is what they were. They seemed kind of like pro-Nazi-ish or something. But I feel as though later on he in his career
disavowed
them of sure, those kinds sure. of things. So
what about like Bread and Jam for Frances? It was published in 1964 by Russell Hoban. Frances is a little baby lesbian bear.
How do you know she's a lesbian?
Wait until you read
this.
Wait,
I don't know this one.
She decides that bread and jam is all she wants to eat, and her understanding parents grant her wish. She gets to eat all the damn bread and jam she wants for breakfast, for lunch, for dinner, and even snack time. Can there ever be too much bread and jam for Frances? Well, eventually, you know, Frances caves in, and guess what she eats?
Beaver.
Meatballs.
So she's not a lesbian.
Well, and I don't know if, like, you know, it's necessarily the best message is, like...
Eat meatballs?
Like, it's not the best example of a book.
Spaghetti and meatballs. But it was just, like, as an adult, you look at this book and you're like, what the hell is going on here? Especially, like, Emily and Clifford, the big red dog.
Yeah, Emily definitely comes off as kind of a lesbian, too. There's just something about her that's just because she's a strong, independent young girl that just she's going to do whatever.
So if you're strong and independent girls, you're automatically a lesbian, according to Feast of Fun.
No.
Not Muffy Fishbasket. You can be whatever you want to be.
It's also the hairdo.
There's a lot of lesbian comedians and writers shag. Like actually we're talking about these books mm-hmm. that actually spoke to people.
Yeah. Sure.
As kids. And certainly like a lot of young lesbians. My generation really related to Emily and her big red dog.
Yeah. And so also too, the big red dog, I think it's a metaphor for her period, right?
Yeah, just sort of like,
are we digging? Are we digging hard here?
Maybe, maybe not.
Well, what about...
Wait, speaking of periods, what was that? Yeah.
Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret by Judy Blume.
And that's more like a preteen kind of book. When that book... Yeah.
That was like straight on about her period.
Oh, yeah.
There was no metaphor there.
There was a girl, like, I think we were in sixth grade or something like that, and we were just about to learn about sex ed or something like that, and a girl had the book, and she, like, passed the page, like, where she had her period, and everybody was reading it. We're like, ooh, she had her period.
But more mm-hmm. Controversial, mm-hmm. which I'm surprised a lot of people don't talk about this as much, is Judy Blume's book, Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing, mm-hmm. where an 11-year-old boy learns how to masturbate and has nocturnal emissions. This was published the year I was born in 1972.
I knew I should have read that book when it was assigned.
I should have read that book, and it didn't connect with me. It didn't make sense because it was too ahead of its time for me.
So, like in eighth grade, mm-hmm. Catholic grade school, mm-hmm. I was reading. Let's see, I was reading V.C. Andrews. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand anything that was happening in that.
Oh, Tales in the Attic, right?
Right. No, My Sweet Audrina. That one is her like pure on sex book. But I was also reading Color Purple, And they were talking about a button melting, and I was like, what's going on?
There's a book that was actually turned to a Disney animated story called The Story of Ferdinand by Monroe Leaf about the gender nonconforming bull that loved to smell flowers instead of getting into bullfights.
It was a huge success, this book. It came out in 1936, and then it was reprinted, and even in 1939, when Gone with the Wind was a big movie in the theater, this book actually outsold it. They sold like 3,000 copies a week. So it was very popular. And the story is of Ferdinand. He's a bull, and he's one of the biggest. He's born, and they're like, everybody's like, oh, this calf looks great. He's great. And
he's, then strong, he's strong. He's vicious.
He's vicious. He's strong. He's beautiful. And they watch him grow. And all he wants to do is like hang out on the field and smell flowers. And then these matadors come, or picadores, or whoever picks out the bulls comes to find them.
Who is
he? They don't have, you don't have bullfighting in Puerto Rico, do they?
That's Mexico and Spain.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so,
same thing.
Kind, almost. But anyway, so they
cockfights.
So Ferdinand is there. They have lots of cockfights there. Ferdinand's there, and he sits on a bee, and a bee stings him, and so he freaks out, starts running around, he gets all angry, and so they think this bull is magnificent, he's going to be wonderful. So they take him to the corredor, and he comes in there, and then all the women are throwing flowers to him, and all he wants to do is smell the flowers, and they're like, aw, he's so sweet, let's get him out of here and kill something else.
How does the story end?
They take him back to the
fields.
No, to the abattoir where they kill him, and then they feed him out of hamburgers. They
make hamburgers. That's not him. Oh my god! Wait, what?
No, they take him back to the field and be like, "You just run around in the field and smell all the flowers."
That's how
you
that
want.
Would happen. But okay, you know? I didn't know you were Puerto Rican.
Yeah, from San Juan, Puerto Rico.
Oh my god! Yes, so my godson is actually Watson Fitzsimmons. Werner Basin is, I had to throw that out there. He's Puerto Rican and Polish. And I'm like, oh my God, girl, you'd like West Side Story all wrapped in one.
Aww.
You're going to rumble against yourself, girl.
Yeah, I think when West Side Story came out, we were very excited about, I'm blanking out, the star of West Side Story, a Puerto Rican actress.
Cheetah Rivera?
Not Cheetah Rivera.
Rita Moreno?
Rita Moreno. Thank you. I was like,
well, you weren't alive when the movie came out.
One was in Broadway. One was in the
movie.
Well,
it was a thing. Like, Rita Moreno starred in The Electric Company, and so she was huge sensation. She's the one who screams that in the beginning of it. Hey, you guys!
It's amazing. I love The Electric.
We're going to
But then, did you ever notice in West Side Story, all the people in the background are, like, Asian?
They are.
Like, they couldn't get, like, Hispanic actors?
They got a lot of people from other countries and cultures.
They're
that
like,
were
oh,
not Latino.
You'll
yeah.
be Hispanic.
You know, they like the Asian restaurants over here on Argyle, how they always have a TV going. I was sitting in one of the Vietnamese places, and they had a Vietnamese version of West Side Story, and they were singing it. I want to go back to Saigon.
Wait, was it a full movie or was it?
It was
like
a full like television production.
What? Yeah. I want to see that.
Well, you might
That's
have to.
Amazing. I'm going to go to that restaurant.
James and the Giant Peach, 1961, Roald Dahl, about a young English orphan boy who enters a gigantic magical peach.
Was a peach an emoji for a butt back then too?
Well, I think
they didn't have emojis back then.
It's a symbol for the feminine, but it's also a symbol for life and a new life that he
right,
was
right. So I don't think this
embarking.
Is like a gay thing because he's like all up eaten up in there.
Eventually, he finds five overgrown, magically bugs. Altered garden bugs,
right?
Which we know that some of those bugs are gender nonconforming. I think there was one character that was neither male or female.
Who?
I think it was the earthworm. But I don't remember if like
was this in the movie because that was
I don't
really
think it was
I
in
saw.
The movie. I think originally in the book. But and so he goes on these adventures, and only through teamwork and their diversity, they're able to save the peach from getting eaten by sharks.
And he's chased by Patsy and Adina from Advent.
Well, in the movie, in the movie,
that was amazing.
Joanna Lumley.
They were so good.
The one of the evil aunts. And this is a common theme that I've noticed that about books that appeal to LGBT people. And I thought about this in The Get Down, the series on Netflix, where they compare the gay character to being an alien. But more fitting, I think, is the idea of the orphan. like in Disney movies and so many children's books.
Oh my God, I wanted to be an orphan so bad as a child. Like that was
little
one of my
orphan
dreams.
Annie, and you think about little Lord Fauntleroy. And
orphans
you think
have great adventures,
right? Right.
Yeah. But there's something that like as people, as misfits, as outcasts, we relate to these
most
orphans.
Definitely.
You know,
most definitely.
And I don't know what it is about that. Like, is it because we're sort of like see the world in different ways, and that's what it means to be LGBT? Is that you're somewhat of nonconformist?
Well, your hero is an orphan in a lot of these kinds of things, because otherwise they have to become their own agent of what's going to happen, because they don't have somebody like
they're
a parent.
They're in control. Yeah.
Whereas they'd have a parent be like, I'll fight the witch for you, kids. Don't
and
worry
about
like it.
They're like super strong. Like they're always like these strong characters, even when they don't think they're strong and you're watching them and you know, but they're always, you know, they decide to go to the ball. They decide to run away from their stepmother into the woods. They decide they're always these characters that decide their own path, which I think always, it spoke to me, and I didn't realize as a child, like, how much that spoke to me. James, he, like, you know, runs away on this peach. Like, it's like, you know, it's like, it's, well, I don't know. Doesn't it, like, run away without him? Like, he doesn't realize.
But even, like, you know, Curious George and certainly, like, Madeline and all these other children's books, it's always like the kid is, you know.
Curious George was a...
is a monkey, but he's an orphan in a sort of sense, and the man in the yellow hat adopts him, and part of it is he's a stranger in a strange land. The strange land is humanity, right? And so there's always that, you know, in Sigmund and the Sea Monsters and H.R. Puffin stuff, and you know, all those
Great Space Coaster.
Yeah, it's always this kid
flies through a
is
giant
found
skeleton
himself
fish.
In a weird land where he's having to negotiate the weirdness, which is, you know, adulthood.
Are we even going to go into Charlie and the Chocolate Factory?
I don't think we should. Dolls.
I don't think we should even, like, touch on that one.
Well, and I think, like, the movie Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is a very different story than the books. And I
think, my God,
the
book's
very dark.
Yeah. Well, right? And that's why the remake, I was, like, totally into it, because it was more into what the book was. Like, it was darker. It was, he actually, like, what's his name? Who did
Roald Dahl.
The author, or are you talking
about the remake?
Tim Burton.
There we go. He actually took when they're singing the songs, he actually took the poems from the book and created the songs. Like it wasn't these Oompa Loompa.
But it just doesn't have the charm as the Gene Wilder.
Well,
film,
it's true.
You know?
It's, yeah.
Well, Roald Dahl hated that Gene Wilder played Willy Wonka and felt that it should have been a British actor who played it.
But everybody else was. They were like, he did not want anybody. He did not want any non-British actors in that movie.
Yeah. So yeah. Let's talk about Pierre. I'm sorry. Forgive me if I'm mispronouncing. Saint-Exupéry, The Little Prince. From 1943.
Oh my God, I haven't read that.
Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. And this is a story that if you ever get a chance to watch The Little Prince on Netflix, oh my God, what an emotional
it's been a long time. I haven't seen
book.
That in forever.
It's fantastic. Check it out on Netflix. But, you know, it's about basically the isolation of a young little boy on his own planet and befriends a rose and goes on amazing adventures. And
like, doesn't he catch a comet?
He catches a comet and he goes, you know, and basically it's, again, it's this, they don't explain where the little prince, why he was like on a small little asteroid. I think the asteroid was like,
yeah, it was
a name.
It,
what is it? R486.
Helibop.
Yeah. And I don't know if that is, I mean, it has a little kid in it, but I don't know if it's really a children's story. Is it?
It was meant as a children's story.
Okay.
Yeah,
oh wait, this is French.
It was French, and it's one of the most
translated.
Because
I read it in college in French class. So, because
like anything British was never meant to be a children's story.
Okay.
Like Harry Potter, I was like so excited that it was great, but I was like, this shit's dark.
But they say like Harry Potter,
like,
it's
bleeding
it's good
and dying,
for kids.
And like
kids can handle that kind of stuff.
I know. Well, nowadays especially.
Mm-hmm. What's gay about Harry Potter besides Dumbledore was turned out to be gay? But Harry Potter's
so
magic is the gay metaphor in itself, because he's literally comes out of the closet that he's living in to discover he has secret powers inside, and his wand is you know,
what? The channel, what's his wand? What's his wand?
Literally, the character's living in a closet and comes out.
Sure. And right, because he's living under the stairs. True.
And it turns out that he is in danger, and part of it is because...
And his family keeps trying to push him back in.
Yeah.
They keep, like, yeah, they're not having him come, like, when the letter comes to out him.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a new theory out there, though, too, because, you know, we all know, like, Harry had part of Voldemort in him.
Uh-huh.
And with those Horcruxes, when people are around Horcruxes, it drives them mad and crazy.
Right.
Like, when Ron was wearing the Horcrux, it got him very jealous, and he became very angry and unreasonable. And that's why, because you're always like, Harry is such a cute little boy. Why is this family so mean to him?
Right.
And part of it is because they were reacting to that Voldemort inside of him.
Sure.
So, you know, I for Uncle, you know, Vern and Petunia and the little monster boy, I have a changed opinion of them.
Oh, they so you're thinking victims. That his hateful family was actually a victim of the Voldemort.
So they were like, they were reflecting what Voldemort was. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So since then, and you know, all these amazing children's books have led to a new generation of
books. Like, especially the stuff that we've been reading.
Mm-hmm. And you guys have been reading a lot of these books. Right. Heather Has Two Mommies. And
So one of the big ones that I read that was really popular was Jacob's New Dress, which Muffy's real name is Jacob, by Sarah and Ian Hoffman. And it's gotten some, like, crazy publicity lately. Like, they had it on the curriculum in North Carolina, which I was like, okay.
North Carolina.
And then all of a sudden, with the new administration, it's now off.
Aww.
Yeah. So then they changed it to Red, a crayon story. So it's the story about a blue crayon. I'm sorry if I'm getting this wrong. So I think it's a blue crayon that's marked as red in the factory. And so he's trying to live his life as a red crayon. So it's basically the exact same story, but they didn't realize because conservatives are stupid. So, but they changed out the stories for those things.
Oh, wow.
So I read it, and there's actually pictures. I have to find them, and, like, I'll send them to you if you want to post them. Of a little boy who came to our story time with Drag Queens, and he was in, his mom's a burlesque performer. He went into her closet and decided this is what he was going to wear. So he's in this hoodie, a pair of jeans, and this bright pink tutu.
Aww.
And he's like kids running around. So tutus. I'm reading this and he's standing in front of me. It's like one of those defining moments where it was like really sweet. Aww. His name's Tesla. Tesla. I mean, come on. He's amazing. Now,
while it's fun to speculate that all these classic children's books may or may not have had a covert message for us as young LGBT kids, in reality, what credits their success is the universal need for people who feel as outsiders to find their place in the world and to celebrate the quirky attributes that exist in us all.
Right.
Storytime with Drag Queens, super excited about this. Where can people find out more information about it?
You can go to the Center in Halsted. You can also go to MuffyFishBasket.com. I'm trying to be better about posting on my website. I'm really bad. Or you can friend me on Facebook, Muffy Fish Basket. I always post about the shows that are coming out.
It's a very organic thing. Like, you guys don't have a mailing list for parents to...
We're starting one because it's so new. So, like, with the Center in Halsted, I know we've been taking emails and everything. So we're trying to get it out there and we're trying to get it started. But it is definitely brand new. And so we're starting fresh. But I know there is a grassroots movement where a lot of parents are, like, tagging each other on my posts.
Like,
about
you should
this.
Come to this.
Yeah,
to
they're
this.
Like, let's go to this. Let's go to this. It'll be fine.
Bring your gender non-conforming child to this.
And they're like, literally, there are kids that show up, and I'm like, and this is, like, old school, like, coming from a child born in the 70s. You're like, wait, are you a boy or a girl? And it's like, you know what? It doesn't matter. I don't care. Like, whatever. I'm in a freaking
dress. You're asking
dad
of the kids.
No, in my head. It's like, in my head, I'm like, oh, are you? And I was like, whatever. I don't even care. Like, come, like, let's, like,
name?
Take a picture. Like,
your name's,
you know,
Chris?
Like, whatever.
Right? Pat. But, so, you know, for, like, kids, it can be, like, if you're misgendered. I still remember, like, being a little kid with my brother, and it was the 70s, and we had long hair, and my mother was getting a costume made for something, and, like, this older woman looked at it, she's like, you have such cute, and she looked at us and went, boys? And it was like a question mark. And I thought to myself, how does she not know we're boys? Like, what is it about us that
my godson, when he was like, we would take him out and everything, and his dad's mm-hmm. would, he had this great little onesie that said, hey girl, hey. But his like hair was long. They're like, oh, your daughter's so cute. And it's like all those old, old ladies and everything. So, but I think it's great that we're at a point now where it's like, we don't have to read into stories. Kids can actually find these stories that appeal and relate to them. We're like, I think
we come
from
though. I mean, I like the fact that everybody is wildly crazy about where the wild things are.
I think it can be whatever you want it to be. So if you're
can
like
we share
a goth,
like as a society,
if you're a goth,
stories,
like it reads to you. If you're an African American in today's society and you're looking for that book that's like about the outcast in our society, that is our society right now. Like everybody, when it comes down to it, everybody is an outcast. And it's until we realize this and we actually realize that we're all a society of outcasts and stop trying to classify each other as what type of an outcast you are, that we're actually going to come together and not elect Donald Trump's. I'm going to sip some tea on that.
Tom Holland, he's the new Spider-Man, is in the latest Lip Sync Battles TV show, which is kind of like the straight people's version of RuPaul's Drag Race.
right.
Where celebrities can lip sync for their life. And he did a tribute to Rihanna's Umbrella.
He did Umbrella. Yeah, he also did Singing in the Rain just as a boy. And then they did a little quick change. And then he came out in a girl's outfit. But he's, obviously a trained gymnast to some degree and maybe a dancer because, he comes from a British tradition and they actually teach the arts over there in their schools.
Right.
So you get to see him do some phenomenal, he doesn't quite do a death drop, but what he does do is a front flip right into
He does what a death drop should be. Here are my rules of drag.
Okay.
Skinny is not a talent.
Okay.
Okay. Throwing yourself on the floor on purpose is not a talent. What he did was he did a front flip and threw himself on the floor. Mm-hmm. Now that is talent.
Tom Holland, I was ready to say your Rihanna tribute to Umbrella was all wet, but that front flip death drop has flooded our basement. Shantae, you are the winner of this week's challenge.
Yay.
Now you do a show called Six Queens, One Diva.
Yes.
Which Daphne Dumont.
Yes.
That's me.
Yes. Stole the show and your tribute to Aretha Franklin.
Okay, could you
tell us about what you thought about Daphne Dumont's performance?
Well, I was backstage, but I heard it was amazing.
That's no excuse.
You didn't
I was backstage
out?
Changing.
Okay.
So, she was hiding from you.
So Aretha Franklin and Britney Spears. These are two, obviously opposite end
huge
of the spectrum divas for, different generations. And I expected just full houses. Girl, we played to twos and threes of people in the house those nights.
Oh, for Britney, too?
For Britney, too.
Really? People did not show up for Britney?
Yeah, but then Bette Midler, we had to turn people away because full house.
Isn't that wild?
Funny. Yeah.
Well, it was kind of funny. Have you ever seen the movie The Mirror Cracked with Elizabeth Taylor?
No.
So it's a murder mystery, right? And you see, she kills somebody.
Was this a hagsploitation?
No, it's an Agatha Christie film.
Okay.
And it was kind of like, there's a woman, because her big pain in her life is that she had a baby, she had a miscarriage because she got German measles, right? And so
that's your secret, abortion.
No, but so the woman that she kills is she meets her years later. She goes, oh yeah, I saw you just before, and the next day I was sick with German measles. And so you see the look on her face change. She's killing. And I met the guy who I'm the guy who picked Aretha Franklin, and my face kind of I was like, I should just kill you now.
I love Aretha Franklin. She is a huge influence in my life. When I saw her Think in Blues Brothers, was changed.
Iconic.
But I think the challenge is that culture changes so quickly.
Right.
And right now, I'm surprised actually Bette Midler was
Bette Midler
turnout.
There's weird people. Who
She's
is the one that I always
now,
make
right?
fun of? That was Linda Eder. Linda Eder had a turnout. You know what I think it is that these, not really Aretha, but these queens that already have a following all the bars are doing them, mm-hmm. so they can just go see them. So it's like
Beyonce
when you have,
night, it's not going to bring anybody because right, already right, is 100 like, Beyonce
it was,
nights.
And Beyonce was like, okay, mm-hmm. but it wasn't Bette Midler. Like, I hold it. Like, we made a ton of money that night.
Like, so if you
it
did like a Lady Gaga night, do you think that would do well?
I don't know. Madonna was big. I will say Madonna was big too. Madonna, because she's an old. Oh, don't we have something about Madonna? Let's lead into that.
We'll get to Madonna in a second. So you guys chose RuPaul for July.
Yes. Well, I didn't. That was the queen that won, Ashley Morgan.
And so as a consequence, now every queen in town who normally doesn't return your phone calls,
oh my God, right,
is breaking down your door to get into the show. Yes. Because they feel like they can film it so they can get on Drag Race.
Right. Oh, you know what? I didn't even think about that. That's probably true.
That's why.
Right.
And they're somebody, all like, I gotta do supermodel.
Right. Somebody just posted the other day. They were like, oh, I might be turning in. It's due today. And I was like, oh, I better get on that. Mm-hmm. Have you seen the like shit that they have to go through to like get on like to even like submit anymore?
No.
It's like 52 pages of like some bullshit. I'm like, girl,
you mean the contract or the questionnaire?
All of it. I'm like, you know what? I really envy the girls that have the time to do this. I'm so busy with bookings, I just can't.
These girls, it's like drag is their whole life, and they're like, a lot of these people, like, they started doing drag because of this TV show, and they're just like, this is my ticket to fame.
And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that, and I'm really grateful to RuPaul to making this a legitimate art form that it wasn't before. It was before, but it wasn't accepted the way that it is.
A commercially
even in the gay community, it was like, oh, I love drag queens, but it was even before RuPaul, like I did a show, and it was a cabaret show, and it was one of those standout moments where I did the show. And it was a musical that me and my friends had wrote, Annie Apocalypse, and I came out afterwards. I had already washed everything off, and this guy was hitting on me full hardcore. Then he saw the eyeliner, and he was like, ugh, never mind. Like, that was drag was before RuPaul.
It is still for some people like that. But
some people,
not,
but
not
anymore,
bad.
I'm like,
it's the rising tide raises all ships. Yes, that's definitely for sure.
Yeah. So, Patti LuPone, what you guys all want to know about... she was, I guess, on Andy Cohen's show.
Yeah. I think
Andy Cohen gets celebrities drunk, and that's why he gets them to spill the beans. Recently called Madonna a movie killer.
Mm-hmm.
He asked her about, you know, had she ever seen Evita, the movie?
What'd she think of it,
What'd she think about it? And she said, well, she was at the gym on the treadmill, and she watched Madonna doing Buenos Aires on MTV. And this is a quote. She said, I thought the scene I saw was a piece of shit. Madonna is a movie killer. She's dead behind the eyes. She couldn't act her way out of a paper bag. She should not be on film or on stage. She's wonderful, you know, a performer for what she does, but she is not an actress. Bing.
Christopher Maloney's kind of like sitting next to her like, you go, girl.
He was like not having anybody.
Do you disagree? You know does anybody disagree with what she says?
I love Madonna in the opening of Temple of Doom. I thought she was fabulous.
Also, it's Spielberg's wife. They got married after that movie.
Yeah.
We all have choices in life.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his.
Kate
also,
Capshaw.
You know what? When Patti LuPone isn't wearing a dress that draws attention to her neck... and her really wrinkly cleavage, we'll discuss these things.
So is Patti LuPone...
I love Patti, though.
She's the one who yelled, stopped the show and yelled at somebody for pulling out their cell phone. Now, ever since that happened... Mark at a movie theater, he stands up and starts yelling at people for pulling their cell phones.
Well, it just happened just twice recently. It was during Beauty and the Beast.
Happened twice in the last 2 days.
Well, like in the past month, we saw Beauty and the Beast and this woman like sitting next to him. And I'm just like, kind of like, this is so annoying. You'd think my husband would be like, hey, can you put your phone away? And so, you know, this woman was like on her phone like twice during the movie. And finally it was the scene where they're going to sing with like Gaston. And so I just like, I'm going to her. I'm like, can you turn your phone off?
You're like, I'm trying to masturbate. Turn your phone off. It's distracting.
But when I yelled at her, the movie went silent, and so my thighs were super loud.
Yes, turn even your better. Fucking phone,
and then,
bitch.
Like 30 seconds later, she's like, "You didn't have to say it so loud." And I'm just like, "Whatever."
She said that.
Oh yeah.
Apparently, I did because you were on your phone again.
And then there was another time. So we were like third or fourth row up in the next level, and then there's people down below. And we just saw Guardians of the Galaxy, and there's somebody on their phone down there. And so I had to make like a little bullhorn with my hands because otherwise I was going to scream into these people's ears. I'm like, turn your phone off. And there was like quick shuffle to get it away.
I've stopped a show before, like in the middle of a show. Like I'll do like Second City. So we do a show. I do a show at Second City. And it's Drag Cab, and that is the like the third Sunday of the month. It's a blast. It's like built an audience because people are done with like their classes at Second City, and they all show up at the bar. And we do a drag show. It's amazing. But like I'll like in the middle of my number or in the middle of like me emceeing, I'll just stop and like look at somebody like while they're on their phone. I'll go right up to them and just stop and just stare at them. The audience loves that shit. But yeah, if you're petty little punk, who cares, girl? Like, you could pee on stage and people would give you a standing ovation. They don't care.
Well, I think Patty has a good point. Yeah.
And that
we
person
went
was
to
recording
see,
her. That. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Was. Yeah.
We went to see, was it Aladdin, the musical? And somebody was like...
Oh, yeah.
On their phone? Or
she was texting during the show, and this girl came up to her afterwards. She's like, that is so terrible for you to have your phone out and like to be texting. And the woman's just like, well, it was a work thing. And the girl's just like, well, you shouldn't come to the theater if you have to work. And Fausto said, so like, do not text during a show.
I'm surprised I'm surprised the ushers, those ushers, the Broadway in Chicago, they get like upset.
And they probably didn't see it. And so the girl
the ushers didn't catch it because they caught it. Yeah. They would have.
They'll like pull you out by your hair. Yeah. They won't ban you from buying tickets forever.
I told the girl, I was like, you should call and complain. And like, well, first of all, you should have told the ushers because they will do something about it.
They'll take her out.
They'll take her out. And the other thing is like, you should really just call and complain about it.
Yeah. So that get some new tickets, girl.
Mm-hmm. But it is like, we live in this time period where people are sort of addicted to their cell phones.
I call them the new cigarettes. Because if you think about your parents in the 70s and 80s, first thing they did when they got up in the morning, get their cigarettes. Go get my, like, parents are that's like, go so get true. My phone, go get my cigarettes, go get, like, that is like, that is, it's the new addiction.
It's wild.
I just, you know, I want people to sort of like enjoy the time with each other, you know, and maybe
I'm getting better at that. And it's hard. It is hard because
take a look.
And especially like if I was like didn't have to deal with Muffy and stuff, like it's like free advertising. Like it has like taken as a performer to a whole new level. So like you have to be on there constantly answering stuff. Like I had to take a night the other night and just answer emails and answer the texts and stuff like that. So, but if I wasn't, I probably wouldn't be on there very much.
Last but not least this week, Richard Simmons is back.
What? His housekeeper let him out?
I guess so.
He's been fine. Okay. And shame on any media company or entity that is milking his desire for privacy in order to make money. Recently, he's filed suit against National Enquirer and Radar Online and is looking into other media entities, and you know who they are.
Oh, you think that Finding Richard Simmons podcast?
He might be suing them, too. In the suit, he is saying that he has been blackmailed. He is alleged that he's been blackmailed by Mauro Oliveira, a former assistant and friend. The suit alleges that Oliveira went to the National Enquirer with three different explanations for Simmons' withdrawal from the public eye. Oliveira allegedly told the Enquirer that Simmons was transitioning into being a woman. Mm-hmm. The Enquirer ran a story claiming that Simmons is now called Fiona. Simmons' rep strongly denied the story at the time, and they're suing Radar Online, they're suing.
So wait, the story is true or not?
It's not true. No,
it's not true. Okay. But, you know, I got to say, I saw that guy who did the Saving Richard Simmons or whatever it's for Finding Richard. He was also on that Andy Cohen Live thing, and he played the bartender. I got to tell you, he looked guilty as fuck because it seemed very exploitative, that whole thing. But I don't know. We have listeners of this podcast that say
many celebrities,
they found it very interesting.
Say that, like, the National Enquirer, like, surprisingly, is, like, there's a lot of times the stuff is actually true.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah,
sure.
So
first of all, the National Enquirer is like a right wing, you know, media machine. So don't take anything that they say too seriously.
I didn't think right wing could actually make something entertaining.
They can. As a kid, I used to love reading, actually, not the articles in the National Enquirer, but the ads in the back.
Oh, the ads were the best.
They're insane, right? Like, those ads were insane. So Richard Simmons is fighting back. He says, if you're messing with me, you will pay.
Richard Simmons is my app. When people ask me, who do you want to get on Cooking with Drag Queens the most? And it's Richard Simmons, because his pictures of himself in drag are awesome. And he's also been an inspiration to me as somebody who like does like a cooking show, because like a lot of his TV show was about like preparing healthy meals. Now, we don't necessarily prepare healthy meals all the time, but learning to cook for yourself and cooking for yourself is a form of self-care, even if it sometimes is junk food.
Cooking with Drag Queens season 3, the Kickstarter, is premiering soon.
Mm. Maybe I'll actually be on this one.
Maybe. Hey, listen, if it actually gets funded.
If it gets funded.
Did you send your audition tape?
Is there like a 47 pages long, not 50. Well, then
it's a lot quicker than RuPaul's. All we ask is that you do an endorsement of yourself in drag. I think you're actually...
I already did.
I know, so you already filmed it.
You told me I should shave my arms, and I said you should shave your makeup.
I did not say anything like
no,
that.
No, he did.
He did? No, so if you want to be on Cooking with Drag Queens, all you need to do is film yourself in drag. Tell us why you think Cooking with Drag Queens is awesome. Tell us about yourself. Tell us what favorite dishes you have, and tell us an interesting story. Mm-hmm. And then just send it to us Dropbox or post it on YouTube, and we'll use it as a testimonial. And if people respond to you, then we will invite
you
to
be on Cooking with Drag Queens. Can I just send you this interview?
The interview I'm that we
send
just
you,
did.
Yeah, I'm just going to send you a link of this interview.
That's my audition. The questions.
This is the other way around. Yep, done.
No, we actually love working with you, and I, you it's know, fun. You're going to be part of the Austin International Drag Festival.
I'm so excited. Yes, I am actually going to be a headliner this year.
Because they couldn't find anybody to
break out your knee pads.
Shut up, I got you.
Break out those knee pads.
Hey.
Headliner.
I am.
More like on her knees.
And I'm probably hosting the actual headlining showcase.
That's fantastic.
Right?
Muffy Fish Basket will be doing her aerialist act in Austin, Texas for the Austin International Drag Festival. The only drag festival where you get to smell and taste the queens.
Where you actually get to see performances instead of just standing and getting a picture with them.
Mm-hmm.
It's listen, there's
early November 2017, right?
Yes, enough it's the second weekend in November.
To do DragCon and to do the Austin mm-hmm. International
no,
Drag
there's
Festival.
Only one.
And
it's Austin
you
International
You don't
drag
need
Fest.
To choose. It's very an affordable trip. It's a very great festival. Some fantastic people are scheduled for there. We're going to be doing a live podcast there, kicking off the festival on Thursday night. In drag.
And girl, can we have some people on your show this time that don't try and sabotage it?
Is it possible to do that?
Right?
So this is what
happened. Girl, that guy's shady up in there. I was done with that.
What are you talking about?
It was really shady. I have no idea.
You say the names.
Boom, boom.
Yeah. I thought it was really weird that, and this is the thing, you know, the Austin International Drag Festival, people who organize it, have hearts of gold.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And most definitely. Jamie is amazing.
And
Jamie,
they're
like,
a little,
and all of his people.
To some extent, they're innocent. And mm-hmm. When you're telling somebody, hey, you know, we want to interview you in front of an audience, these people are like, show up. Be on.
Right.
Come in costume. Be energized, right, you know? And a couple of the guests that we had been offered, who seemed like really interesting people behind the scenes, when they actually got onto the stage, refused to answer any questions, showed up.
Yes.
It was like not a drag. And tried to sabotage the experience.
And I was like surrounded by shady queens, and they were like, those are shady queens. But then we got on to Lady Beard, and Lady Beard was lovely.
Oh, yeah.
For an interviewer.
Yeah, he's
and
fantastic.
Sexy, hot. And then you guys tried to out him, and you were like, oh, your contract says that we can't ask if you're gay or straight. Like, you were like straight up, he was getting really nervous.
Well,
and his, like,
I'm not
his
asking
manager
him
off,
if he's gay or straight.
I know,
we
but
didn't
his
ask
manager,
him.
His manager off the side, she was like ready to tackle you. She was getting ready. She was like watching.
She was Japanese woman.
Isn't that weird, though?
Yeah.
That the contract says that?
Because he's straight,
really,
obviously. Like,
he totally is, but
and he
doesn't
want
to come appeal out as, to the gays.
I think it's really interesting, though, that, like, because gays would eat him up
but
if
remember,
he came out as straight or whatever, you know? It's like, people don't care. And I thought it was weird that they were, like, harping on this, and I was like, I don't give a fuck, you know? It's like,
but he was super excited to be called a drag queen.
Yeah,
he was
like,
I've
oh my
embraced.
God, thank you. Except I can't do it in his Australian accent. That
oh
made
my
me
God,
wet.
It was so great.
Like, yeah, it made me moist down there.
Crikey.
He was very sexy.
Shrimp on the Bobby. Like,
that's where Sasha Velour first sort of made her international drag appearance before she was on Drag Race. And the thing about, like, in the Austin International Drag Festival is, like, you get to meet tomorrow's drag queens today.
Most definitely. And like, they have an 11-year-old drag queen coming this year.
We're interviewing her.
Yeah. G? Is that... is that her name?
I'm not sure her name. I've talked to her mother.
But she's like, okay. But, yeah, but she's like,
Mark's I saw like, I don't want to work with children.
She can read. I'm trying to get story time down there because like her and I, we could do like story time. It'd be amazing. It'd be amazing. I should actually contact them and say,
yeah, you should be like, do a story time because that can get other people coming.
It would be so much fun.
That'll go so well in Texas. People will be like, yes, let's bring our.
Well, Austin is the Chicago of Texas.
That's true.
Just like the only reason that we are a blue state is because of Chicago.
Oh, I see. So Austin is very liberal city.
Oh, my God. Yes. I mean, they're still kind of reddish.
I got to tell you, it's turning to San Francisco because when we went to Austin for the drag festival in May.
Right.
Last year.
Last year.
You could travel to the other one.
And recently I just went down there to visit my mom, and the prices in the restaurants had gone up like by 20%. Because of the gays? I don't know. Maybe it was about South by Southwest, but I was like, holy shit. Like everything's really expensive down there. Yeah. But
in Austin?
Yeah, it's getting it's getting pricey.
Girl,
so
I can't handle that.
It's the other LA. So Austin's like a very glamorous city. Lots of celebrities
are there.
Let's
not get crazy.
It is. We ran into Matthew McConaughey, and he was right after he had lost all that weight for Dallas Buyers Club.
Oh, really?
So he looked like a lizard, you know? And we were like, and there's this woman trying to get his autograph. He was like, ma'am, not today, ma'am, not today.
What I loved, though, about Barley Jean when I got to picture with her, I was like, can we take a selfie? She was like, okay, turn into the light. Now turn your head. Like, now she started directing me. I was like, calm down for a second.
She's a control queen. Yeah.
Mm,
well, she knows how good she looks. And she's, you know, a lot of these queens.
No, she was directing me. She knew how good she looked. She was trying to help me.
These queens, they got game, you know.
Right? So no, she knew. She knows what she was like, turn into the light, takes, turn your head, tilt this way. Yeah, no, she was all about it.
Like,
she
if you take
sweet.
A selfie with a lot of these drag queens, this Friday here in Chicago, the Drag Queens of Comedy. All the famous girls, Lady Bunny, Coco Peru.
I'm so
Peaches
sad everybody's
going
to miss them because they're going to be coming to Uptown Underground to see me perform.
Tell us about that show.
Uptown Underground. Well, it's with Kiss Kiss Cabaret, which is amazing. So Jen Kincaid started. She was like the founder of Kiss Kiss Cabaret, and it basically made enough money that they opened their own club. It used to be a speakeasy just down the street from the Green Mill. Mm-hmm. It's pretty amazing.
Definitely check it out. Yes. It's going
to
be great.
I do aerials there, so you have to come. Yes. I have a new aerial number.
You do?
I do.
What happens in it?
Well, if you come see it, you'll know. No. Not yet.
Is it a bad idea to tell a circus acrobat to break a leg?
No.
It's the same idea.
Yeah.
Don't break a leg. Please don't break. We don't have
my husband always. My husband always says, don't break your face. And I was like, oh, that's all? Like, I can be paralyzed. Just don't break my face. That's like, okay.
He's got to look at it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, thank God, you know, it's like your face is still intact.
Right?
I want to remind folks that we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, consider signing up today at feastoffun.com/plus. Because your contribution to the show is what makes this show happen. We wouldn't be able to have fabulous guests like Muffy Fish Baskets.
Me. Yes, girl.
If it weren't for you.
I want to do a shout out to Eric Miller in Texas, who sent us a care package.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
And he also gave us a donation.
And we want to do a shout out to Zim and Noah, who are absolutely lovely people and got us
a nice sushi dinner.
A nice sushi dinner. Thank you guys so much for my birthday.
Yeah. Happy birthday.
It was really nice of you guys to do that. These are people who have been listening to our podcast for years, and we consider you guys part of our family. You're our friends. When they're in town, we hang out with them and they believe in us. And if it wasn't for them, we would not be here. Mm-hmm. So
we believe in them.
So, yeah. So thank you so much. Thanks, guys, so much for listening. We have fantastic T-shirts on our store, feastoffun.com/store. We can get fabulous T-shirts like our Cooking with Drag Queens merchandise and the Hunty University, where you can read everyone, the children, the children's books. I really love. Absolutely. I got to tell you, Muffy, you've done a lot of great shit. But story time with drag queens.
I'm excited for it.
I believe in it. Mm-hmm. It's going to be huge.
Yeah, it's fun.
You better clean up your act because you're into the next Mr. Rogers in a pair of pantyhose.
I actually have a new Lady Elaine Fairchild. I'm scared. We have posters coming out soon. They're amazing. I told the guy who did my Muffy Fish Biscuit logo, I wanted a very... what's her name? Lisa Frank type poster. Yeah. He made it very... I'm going to have Trapper Keepers made. Because this is so... Trapper school. Keeper, Lisa Frank. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Mrs. Grossman stickers, honey. Mm-hmm. Got to peel and stick.
Right. Scratch and sniff, baby.
It smells like grapes.
Smells like fish basket.
Bye-bye.
Bye, baby. Bye, thank you.